Daniel said. Bob nodded. We could, but Gene here isn't much of a camper.
I don't shit in the woods, Gene replied.
Besides, every place you know of there, so do another couple thousand people. It could get crowded, Bob said. Not to mention the fact that Texas has held it together. They told the feds to go pound sand. They have electricity, and things there are normal still, Teague said.
I think we should go to Texas, Daniel. I mean, sure, this is home, but if it's too dangerous, I'd rather just leave, together, Christie said.
Daniel looked at her. He was so unsure. There were so many things to consider, so many unknowns. Should he toss in his lot with this group of people he hardly knew? Sure, he really liked Christie, maybe even loved her. That was yet to be answered. But he didn't know Gene hardly at all, only seeing him around the building. Same for Bob, who he had a little more than a passing familiarity with. As for Teague, when they were kids, they played together, often on summer breaks. The two would run the woods together and get into the typical trouble boys left unsupervised in the woods would get into. But that was a long time ago, and both, now men, had changed a lot. Daniel looked around the room. It seemed everyone's mind was made up, and they were all waiting on him. He threw his hands up. Let's go to Texas. Christie clapped and jumped up, wrapping her arms around his neck. I'm so excited. This is going to be so much fun. Teague snorted.
That remains to be seen.
Gene levered himself from his chair.
Now that it's decided, we need to get ready. The generators won't last more than a couple of hours. I suggest if anyone wants a shower, you get it now.
Christie spun around.
That's me. I'm going down to get one.
Then she had a thought. Are we going by our places to get stuff?
We'll have to see what it's like out there. If it's safe enough, yes. If not, then we'll just have to keep moving, Bob said.
Daniel stood up.
I guess I'll go take a quick shower, too. Might be the last chance.
Christie, Gene, and Daniel left the office and headed for the shelter in the basement. As they came out into the mechanical space from the elevator, Daniel stopped in his tracks and shouted,
What the fuck did you do to my van?
The van had been pulled up closer to Gene's work area. It was now adorned with expanded metal mounted to pipe frames and welded to the body of the van over all the windows. The front bumper now sported pieces of pipe welded to it at 6-inch intervals and very sharp.
It had quite a Mad Max look to it.
Gene smiled.
You like it?
Like it? Look at my paint. You ruined it.
Gene rubbed his mustache and nodded.
I guess you're right. All those rocks, bottles, and other shit that's going to be thrown at this thing wouldn't leave any marks on it.
He looked at Daniel and smiled. Sorry. Daniel walked over to the van. The new screens were very well made. The welds were nearly perfect and didn't look as though they'd been rushed. Gene was obviously skilled when it came to fabrication. All the welds had been ground and brushed clean and covered with a layer of gray primer. The more he looked at it, the more it made sense. Gene was right. They were sure to run into trouble somewhere, and these would prevent them from having things hurled into the van. Christie was looking at the short pipes welded to the front bumper. She looked back at Gene and asked,
What are these for?
Gene walked up and turned sideways in front of the van.
Crowd sometimes will try to stop vehicles by simply standing in front of them. These will keep folks from doing that. No one's going to want to take this stabbing into them long.
Daniel came around after inspecting the van.
Looking at Jean, he smiled. Damn good idea, Jean. I'm glad we have you with us. Jean smiled. Christy leaned over and shouted at Daniel. I'm going to take a shower. You coming? Daniel nodded and took her hand. Looking at Jean, he said, Thanks, Jean. Jean wiped his mustache and glanced at Christy. Feeling she couldn't hear him, he asked, Can I come? Daniel laughed and followed Christy towards the little door leading to the shelter.
Chapter 7. The van sat idling, its power stroke diesel engine running smoothly, nearly imperceptibly. An air of nervousness settled over the group. While everyone was certainly ready to begin this expedition, trepidation at what awaited them consumed each and every one.
Everyone know what they're supposed to do? Bob asked, getting a nod from each of them.
Jean looked at Teague.
You sure you understand what you have to do when you get up there?
Teague waved him off.
Jean, this ain't my first rodeo with this kind of thing. This is kid stuff.
Christy wrinkled her nose.
What kind of kid were you?
Teague smiled and pointed at Daniel.
Ask him. We did it all together.
Christy looked at Daniel. He held his hands up.
Not all of it.
Teague laughed.
My ass. It's time, Bob said, as he looked at Teague. Get your ass up the stairs, cousin.
Teague pointed at Daniel.
Don't you fucking leave without me. Don't worry, buddy, I won't. You just hurry up and get your ass down the stairs as fast as you can.
They climbed into the van and took their seats, and Jean took up his position. Bob was riding shotgun up front. He had one of the 12-gauge Mossbergs in his hand, and two carbines sat on the floor between the seats. Jean had moved the two crates blocking the roll-up door, so Bob and Daniel sat staring at the gray metal as they waited. Teague sprinted up the stairs to the top level and ran over to the side where the bottles waited. A couple dozen small plastic water bottles sat lined up against the wall. Each one had a wad of aluminum foil shredded into the bottom. 2 gallons of muriatic acid sat with them. Teague pulled the nitrile gloves from his pocket and put them on, along with the safety glasses hanging around his neck. Bob insisted on the safety equipment. Teague protested, but was actually very happy to have it on. Opening both of the jugs, he picked up the first one and started pouring acid into the bottles. It was a quick and messy job, spilling quite a bit of acid on the concrete. As soon as all the bottles had acid in them, some considerably more than others, Teague started capping the bottles and tossing them over the side of the building. He tried to make sure there were some close to the building and others farther out in the street. They wanted to create a bit of a path out into the road. When there were still 3 bottles left to throw over, the first one on the ground detonated with a surprisingly loud pop and a shout from the crowd below. He quickly capped the other 3 and threw them over before turning and running as fast as he could for the stairs. He took the stairs in great leaps, covering 4 and 5 in a jump. On one landing, he twisted his ankle slightly and had to slow down a bit. But as he came out onto the ground floor, he started shouting. Hearing him coming, Jean hit the button and the security gate started to rise. The side door was open on the van and Teague dashed for it, diving in, out of breath. As soon as there was room, Daniel pulled the van through, the fuel barrels on the roof scraping along the bottom of the door. Once the van was through, Jean ran for the side door as well. Once he was in, Christy slid the door shut. Bob's eyes darted left and right. The bottles had the desired effect and cleared people away from the immediate area. They were running in every direction, thinking it was some sort of poison gas.
"Go left!" Bob shouted, and Daniel gunned the van onto Piedmont Road.
The road was cluttered with broken pieces of bricks, wood, glass, and spent tear gas canisters. The crowd, temporarily dispersed by Gene's impromptu chemical bombs, saw the van when it rolled out of the garage and were now focused on it. Rocks, bottles, and other debris now started flying towards the van, though not many of them actually hit it. Christie shouted, "Oh my God!" as a bottle smashed against the screen on the rear window. "There's so many of them!"
Gene casually looked out the window. "Let me see if we can thin them out a bit."
He reached down and picked up a hose with a funnel connected to it, then took a gallon jug and started spinning the lid off with two fingers.
"What's that?"
Christie asked.
Gene smiled. "You'll see."
Once the lid was off, he started to trickle the oil into the funnel. Almost immediately, a thick cloud of smoke started to billow from the rear of the van. Daniel looked in the rearview mirror and saw the smoke.
"Oh, shit! The van's smoking!"
Bob looked over his shoulder and added,
"Oh, shit!"
Gene was laughing. He stopped pouring the oil in and held the jug between his legs, as he held the hose up to allow the oil left in it to drain into the exhaust.
"Don't worry, it's just a little something I added to the van."
Daniel looked in the mirror again.
"You did this to my van? What the hell did you do?"
Gene shouted over his shoulder,
"It ain't gonna hurt it."
Then he looked out the rear window. All he could see was the cloud of thick white smoke.
"They ain't coming through that."
And they weren't. The street was thick with the smoke. It billowed up between the buildings that prevented it from dissipating too quickly. Daniel was racing towards the incomplete barricade at the intersection of Piedmont and Peachtree.
"Brace yourself," he shouted,
just before they crashed into the pile of tires, pallets, and other crap the protesters had piled up. It was no match for the van, which easily crashed through it. Christie's apartment was the closest and was the first destination. It was a straight shot down Piedmont for a mile or so, then a right on Lindbergh Drive. This route would take them past the Havana Club, where Daniel and Christie had been dancing when the riot news broke, as well as a number of high-end luxury car dealerships, including Jaguar, Rolls-Royce, Land Rover, Mercedes-Benz, and one that carried both Ferrari and Lamborghini. The smoke did its job, and they got away from the bank with no damage and no real conflict. But things quickly changed as they passed by the luxury car dealerships. Those who viewed themselves as underprivileged had apparently decided to get themselves a fine automobile. They witnessed someone breaking the showroom window at the Ferrari dealership on their left, and they sped along to avoid the melee there. But then, it got even worse. As they came up to the Rolls-Royce and Land Rover dealerships on their right, folks had already broken out all the glass and were driving out with the ride of their dreams. Guess it had not occurred to them that these vehicles were maintained with very little gas in them, and the likelihood of getting more gas during this nightmare with virtually all businesses shut down, would be next to zero. And with the attention these cars draw on the road, their journey would probably be a very short one, and end quite badly. Teague commented on the scene.
"Hey, maybe they figured it was worth it to go out in style. But that's giving them the benefit of the doubt that they were thinking at all."
Daniel managed to quickly drive on past the car thieves without too many issues. But they weren't out of the woods yet.
"There's trouble ahead. I see smoke," Daniel announced.
Bob shifted the shotgun.
"Just keep driving. Look for a weak spot and push through it, no matter what."
He looked at Daniel. Do not stop this van. Daniel nodded and gripped the wheel a little tighter. People filled the street ahead of them. Debris from the businesses along Piedmont littered the road, and several small fires burned in the road as well. A couple of the businesses were even on fire. As they approached, Daniel stared in amazement as two men carried a commercial espresso machine across the road in front of them. What the hell do they think they're going to do with that? He thought. But the looting wasn't limited to coffee makers. He saw many items being carried away. Flat-screen TVs seemed high on the list, as well as clothes. One man ran across the road with a stack of shoeboxes, presumably with heisted pairs of sneakers in them. Daniel started to accelerate. He wanted anyone considering coming at the van to think twice about it. The van swerved between piles of burning tires, flaming dumpsters, and other obstacles. Bob put his window down and poked the muzzle of the Mossberg out. Gene had the foresight to add shooting ports through the screens. There were holes cut through the expanded metal, reinforced with pipe around their edges. This would allow them to deploy weapons from inside the van, a critical addition to the van's defenses.
"Call out any threats you see," Teague shouted.
He was in the back of the van. Gene had taken the glass out of the rear doors to allow for the same thing. This was Teague's position. He had one of the Patriot Warhogs poked out the rear. He was very familiar with the AR platform and was happy to have it in his hands. If anyone approached the back of the van, he was going to shoot them in the face. People of every class and station swarmed the area like ants picking at a carcass. Only these were people picking at the corpse of civilization, and the body wasn't even cold yet. If the rest of the country was in the same shape as here, the nation was in a world of shit. The van started drawing more and more attention. Not that cars were uncommon, but driving one right into a crowd of looters was. People began pointing at the van and running towards it. Others shoved shopping carts out into the road. Daniel slammed into these, sending them flying through the air. Others rolled small dumpsters out or tossed trash cans in his path. All of these he plowed through.
"Hurry up!" Teague shouted.
"I'm trying!" Daniel shouted back.
"Everyone, settle down.
Just keep your eyes open,"
Bob said in a calm voice. But the people on the street were moving. The sight of the van on the move was like a flame to a moth. Whether it was because their cars were out of fuel, or they were simply caught up in the looting, people were rushing towards it. Lindbergh was just ahead, and people were filling the intersection.
"Find a hole and steer for it," Bob said. "They'll move." "Do you see a hole, Bob?
I damn sure don't,"
Daniel shouted back.
"Oh my God, look at all of them,"
Christie shouted. Teague came forward and stuck his head between the front seats.
"Get off me, asshole,"
Christie shouted. He ignored her and checked out the crowd.
"Where do I go, Bob? Where do I go?"
Daniel shouted. Bob pointed to the right side of the road.
"Get up on the sidewalk."
"Fuck this,"
Teague said as he disappeared back to his seat. Daniel was steering the truck for the sidewalk, but it was crowded with people. A sudden burst of gunfire caused him to duck, and the van jerked as he did.
"What the hell was that? Who's shooting at us?"
Daniel shouted. Bob was looking for the shooter. Teague shouted over everyone in the van.
"Just drive! It's me! I'm clearing the street!"
And it was working. When the shots rang out, people scattered in all directions, mainly out from in front of the van, which opened a lane for Daniel. Bob pointed to the opening.
"Punch it! Go!"
Daniel floored the van, and the power stroke belched a cloud of smoke as they bounced over the beginnings of yet another barricade.
They made it through the intersection as a hail of shit landed on the van. Teague, sitting in the back of the van, was laughing hysterically. Daniel made a mental note to thank him properly. They finally made it to Christie's apartment complex, post Peachtree Hills Apartments, a trendy complex that tried to offer the feel of a mountain retreat. Lots of stone columns and varied exterior color schemes. It sported everything a young woman would want in upscale, multi-family living. It had two pools, a fitness center, and a clubhouse that hosted events encouraging the residents to feel they are part of a community. But there wasn't much of a sense of community there today. It was clear there'd been trouble. Broken windows and debris littered the usually attractive landscape. Christie stuck her head between Bob and Daniel.
"Oh my God, what's going on here?" she asked.
"Where's your apartment?" Bob asked.
"I know," Daniel replied, as he wheeled past the clubhouse. He threaded his way back to the rear of the complex. Christie had a second-floor apartment. As an attractive single woman, she didn't want a ground-floor apartment that would be easier for someone to break into.
"Daniel, you and Cousin go with Christie. Gene and I will stay with the van. But you need to be Ricky Tick. We've got no time to waste here," Bob said. "Gene, get that other shotgun and cover the rear of the van," Bob shouted over his shoulder. Gene nodded and pulled the Mossberg over, racking a shell into the chamber. When Daniel stopped, Bob said,
"Leave it running and hurry the hell up."
Teague was already out the back doors and shouted, "On you!" Gene opened the side door and stepped out, and Christie followed. Daniel quickly got out, looking at the people who were watching them from balconies and those milling about the complex. Bob shouted at him as he looked back in the truck.
"You forget something?" Bob asked.
Then he tossed the Warhog to him. It surprised Daniel. Guns were outlawed, and he wasn't comfortable having one in public. But it had the desired effect. People disappeared from the balconies, and those in the parking lot decided they weren't all that interested in the van now. Daniel led the way up the stairs towards Christie's apartment, with her following and Teague bringing up the rear. The news wasn't good when they got to the second floor. Christie's door was open, the frame of the door smashed in. Christie let out an audible gasp as she went to step through the door. Teague grabbed her and pulled her aside.
"You don't know if there's anyone in there. We need to check first." He looked at Daniel. "You follow me and watch my back. I'll clear the place. Just stay with me."
Daniel nodded as Teague shouldered his weapon and stepped through the door. The living room and kitchen were a mess. Everything was tossed. The smell of rotting food mixed with the general odor of a space that's been closed up with no air circulating. Seeing no one thus far, Teague moved towards the hallway with Daniel in tow. The first door was the bathroom. It was empty. The second door was her small office. As Teague was about to kick the door open, it suddenly swung inwards. A young guy stood there with a bandana over his face and pack slung from one shoulder. Teague immediately stepped forward and delivered a devastating butt stroke to the kid's chin, crumpling him to the floor. Teague stepped over him and cleared the room. Looking over his shoulder at Daniel, he said,
"Check the bedroom."
Daniel nodded and went to the bedroom, the door already open. It was empty and, just like the rest of the house, had been tossed. Christie was standing in the living room looking at her life scattered and smashed on the floor. Daniel called out to her, and she made her way down the hall. When she saw the man on the floor with Teague standing over him, she stopped.
"Why'd you do this? Why'd you wreck my house?" she shouted.
The kid was on the floor, rocking back and forth as he held his jaw. Seriously pissed off, she delivered a savage kick to his stomach.
Teague grabbed her by the arm. Go get your shit. We don't have time for this. What's done is done. Teague was pushing her away as she took another shot at him, a glancing blow that added insult to the injury. She went to the bedroom where Daniel had already pulled out a duffel bag and laid it out on the bed. Her clothes were scattered all over the room. All the drawers of the dresser were pulled out and dumped. The little musical jewelry box her dad had bought her on a family trip to France when she was 12 lay smashed on the floor. She started to cry. Daniel came to her.
Come on, babe. I know this sucks, but we have to hurry. Let's find your clothes and get out of here.
She wiped her eyes and nodded. After all, these were just things. They could always be replaced. Well, most of them could. They could hear Teague in the hallway screaming at the kid, but they had to focus on what they were doing. It didn't take them long to get what she would need from what was left. Christy went into her bathroom.
Let me grab one more thing.
Once in, she screamed.
They destroyed my makeup! What the F, man?
In a whiny voice, she added,
Why'd they do that?
She came out with a few things and tossed them into the duffel. Looking at Daniel, she said,
Let's go.
She sounded defeated. As they passed Teague and his captive, Christy kicked him in the ass.
Why'd you break my makeup, you sorry prick? She kicked him again. Asshole!
He flinched, and she reached down and snatched the bandana from his face.
I know you. What are you doing here, you sick asshole? What'd you come here for?
He held his hands up.
I'm just looking for food, that's all.
Teague kicked him.
In the apartment's office and bedroom?
He looked at Daniel and Christy and told them to take off. They headed out, and Daniel suggested they check her kitchen to see if there was any food they could use. But that turned out to be a useless endeavor, as it had all been cleaned out. Not even the spices remained. Teague watched as they headed for the door. Daniel paused as they stepped out and looked back.
You coming?
Yeah, I'll catch up in a minute. Just want to make sure this asshole doesn't try anything.
Daniel nodded, and he and Christy headed down the stairs. He looked down at the kid and asked,
What the fuck were you doing?
Did you think you were going to break in here and try to take her ass? Is that what you thought?
Holding his hands up, the kid replied,
No, I was just looking for food.
Teague snarled.
You lying fuck.
He stood up and delivered several savage blows with the butt of the rifle to the kid's head, leaving him unconscious. With his adrenaline pumping, Teague straightened up and looked around. Wiping sweat from his brow, he quickly headed for the door. Teague ran down the stairs, taking them in big leaps and landing on the sidewalk in moments. Bob was standing beside the van with the door open while scanning the area for trouble. As Teague passed him, Bob asked,
Everything okay up there?
Teague looked back over his shoulder.
Yeah, there was a guy in there, but he wasn't any trouble.
Bob looked towards the apartment.
Where is he?
Sleeping, Teague answered, as he climbed into the back of the van. Where are we going now? Christy asked. Bob climbed in the van, placing the butt of his rifle on the floor between his feet. He rubbed his temples in frustration.
I think after this, we need to get the hell out of town.
I agree, Teague said.
Christy looked at Daniel. Don't you need to go to your apartment? He shrugged.
Not really. I mean, there's lots of food there, but I don't think it's worth the risk. We'd have to go back north, and that's just too dangerous, in my opinion.
From the front seat, Bob asked,
What about you, Gene? I'd like to go by and get some tools, But there's nothing there I can't live without, Jean answered. Christy looked at him. What about clothes? You're still wearing your work uniform. Jean held up a bag. I have others here. Work uniforms? Don't you want something else to wear? Jean laughed. Sweetheart, I've been wearing a uniform of one kind or another for so long, it's all I own. I don't need other clothes. Christy looked him up and down. She couldn't understand why anyone would want to wear that sort of getup. But the decision was made, and they were getting out of the area as fast as possible. All right, then. Let's head to my house. It's south of here, and will be a good place to stay under the radar for a couple of days, Bob said. Daniels started the van. All right, Navigator, which way? Bob leaned back and thought about it. My place is about 30 miles from here. I usually take I-85, but I'd rather not be on the interstate for this trip. Where is your place exactly? Daniel asked. Bob pointed off to the southeast. It's down southeast of the metro area, near the Chattahoochee River. Pretty rural out there. Daniel drummed his thumbs on the steering wheel. That means we have to get through some densely populated areas of Atlanta. And we have to do that without getting on the interstate, if we can avoid it, Bob added. There was no good way. In the end, they started working their way south on surface streets. For the most part, they drove through sprawling bedroom communities of suburban Atlanta. The route took them through Druid Hills and down to Gresham Park. It was not an easy trip. Everywhere, people hustled about, bent on their own personal mission. But the real threat was the number of people they saw with guns. For something that was outlawed, there was certainly a proliferation of firearms on the street. Conversely, there was the obvious absence of any kind of law enforcement. They were simply gone. No APD, no National Guard, no LEOs of any kind. That vacuum had to be filled somehow. Both the good and the bad were doing their best to plug the breach. Residents of the nicer suburbs were doing what they could to keep riffraff out of their neighborhoods. Most of those neighborhoods had cars pulled up to their entrances, blocking the road. Armed men would watch the van with suspicion as it passed them by. Nothing says creeper louder than a van. Back in the day, there was the joke of, "Hey kid, you want some candy?" Or asking a child to help you find your pet to lure them into a van. The modern version of that is a creepy-ass van with free Wi-Fi on the side of it. And with Gene's modifications, it now resembled something out of a Mad Max fiction. The van naturally drew everyone's attention. "How far away are we?" Christy asked, as she watched a truck slowly roll past them on the other side of the street. "We've got a long way to go. Keep your eyes open," Bob said. To stay away from the interstate, Bob was guiding Daniel down Moreland Avenue, a fairly large thoroughfare common to the U.S. Numerous streets intersected with it, and its sides were lined with small commercial centers and entrances to housing developments. This was urban sprawl. It's what kept America growing for so long. But what it did was put resources farther and farther from the very people these areas were developed for. Farmers and ranchers were pushed farther and farther from the city center. Waterways were managed, a benign term for redirecting, damming, polluting, or in many cases, removing them altogether. In other places, they were artificially dug in locations water was never meant to stand. All in the name of progress, of course. But it seems the modern vision of progress is to remove people as far away from any form of independence as possible. Progress is synonymous with dependence on the government, on the system, on others to fulfill your daily needs,
And now, with the great system of progress brought to a grinding halt, people were left to fend for themselves. The whole modern idea of progress is that there will always be more progress. The idea that we, as a nation, should prepare ourselves for the day when not only do we stop progressing, but actually to start to regress was simply unfathomable. How could that happen? We're America, the land of perpetual opportunity. But all that opportunity was based on perpetual consumption, and when that stopped, the nation stopped. As they approached I-20, they came to the intersection with Memorial Drive. Gene started to chuckle and pointed out the window of the van.
Check those guys out.
Daniel looked out the window. A Valero gas station sat on the corner opposite a payday loan store. This neighborhood could be considered the other side of the tracks. The parking lot was crowded with armed men, some standing on the edge of the road. Those at the side of the road were waving at cars as they passed. The real shock was the military armored vehicles sitting in the parking lot. The two MRAPs filled most of the parking lot. The men swarming around them seemed excited. They were very animated as they whooped and shouted. Not only did they have the two trucks, they also had M4s and saws. They were shooting these wildly into the air. Not the best way to entice people in to buy gas.
What are they doing? Christy asked.
Bob looked at the station as they rolled over Memorial.
They're selling gas. See that generator there? It has a small pump set up, and they're pumping gas out of the underground tanks.
They obviously took over the station and are selling what's now their fuel. Christy took in the scene.
They commandeered the station, she said.
More of a statement than a question. She turned back to the front, looking out through the expanded metal that covered the windshield.
We need to get away from people.
Amen, sister, Bob replied.
As they came abreast of the station, Daniel looked out at a young kid sitting in the turret of one of the MRAPs. He was sitting behind a saw and had a bead on Daniel as they passed. Whether it was ignorance, stupidity, or sheer bravery, he wasn't afraid. It was as if he knew the kid wasn't going to shoot. It was more of an intimidation move.
There's your armory stash, Teague said, as he made his way up to the front of the van. Do they look like the type of people that could take down a National Guard armory?
Bob flicked a butt out the window.
Nope. And it's scary that those kinds of people have that kind of hardware. But you have to wonder how they got it.
Gene snorted.
You know how they got it.
Christy looked at Gene. With genuine curiosity, she asked,
How?
Gene started to laugh.
The government gave it to them.
Confused, she asked,
Why would they do that?
To cause chaos. Having people like that on the street will make normal folks scared, and scared people are much easier to control, Bob said.
Christy looked back towards the gas station.
How do you know? I mean, I don't believe it.
Gene shrugged.
Can't prove it. But how else do you think they got that stuff? There's no way a bunch of hood rats stole that from an armory. It would take more force than they could muster.
On the south side of I-20, the neighborhood changed yet again. Ormwood and most of the land on this side of Atlanta once belonged to the Creek Nation, before they too were forced out in the name of progress. Now, fast food restaurants and check cashing stores were the dominant businesses. In normal times, the neighborhood had its share of crime. If you left an iPod on the seat of your car, you could expect someone to knock out a window and take it. Shades were kept drawn to prevent anyone from seeing the new flat screen. It was a place where residents had to be proactive. Not that it was a crime-ridden hellhole,
but vigilance was the word of the day. Now things were different. Both the Shell and Sitco stations on this side were also being looted of their fuel. And from the numbers of cars lining up, cash was king, and no one was asking any questions. Just as they passed Delia's chicken sausage stand, two men ran out in the road in front of them. Both had pistols and were firing back in the direction of the old smooth Ashlar Grand Lodge. The old building was one of the original Black Masonic lodges on this side of Atlanta. Now it sat defunct and graffiti-covered. Daniel slammed on the brakes as the two men, holding their pistols sideways and higher than their heads, fired round after round back in the direction of the old lodge.
"Oh, shit!" Christy shouted. "What do we do?"
Bob had his carbine up to his shoulder.
"This ain't our fight, and we don't know who's who."
The two men continued to fire as they made for the other side of the street. One of the men suddenly collapsed onto the road. His fellow shooter looked down at his stricken comrade, turned, and took off running around the side of the First Iconium Baptist Church. Three other men spilled onto the street. They approached the downed man, still alive, but badly hurt. They circled around him, shouting and kicking him. After a moment, one of them raised a pistol and shot him in the face as he pleaded for his life. After the shot, the three continued to shout at the body. Then one of them noticed the van. Using his pistol, he swatted his partners and motioned at the van.
"Oh, shit," Bob muttered.
The three stood in the road, looking at the van and talking, though it was unintelligible. They appeared to come to a consensus and started to walk towards the van.
"What do I do?" Daniel asked. "When they get a little closer, run their asses over," Bob said.
"Screw that,"
Teague shouted from the rear of the van as the back door burst open. Teague jumped out and rounded the corner of the van with the Warhog to his shoulder. He stepped wide to draw fire from the vehicle should they start shooting. But seeing Teague and the rifle evaporated their resolve, and all three took off at a dead run in the opposite direction. Teague glanced at the body in the road for a moment, then quickly got back in the van and slammed the rear doors. Bob turned in his seat and shouted,
"Would you stop doing shit like that?"
Teague looked at him quizzically.
"Like what?"
"Getting out of the van."
Teague looked down as he positioned the butt of his weapon between his feet. Looking up, he quietly asked,
"What was your plan?
How are you going to get us out of here?"
Bob shook his head and pointed at Teague.
"You're reckless, and you're going to get yourself killed."
Daniel wasn't waiting around. As far as he was concerned, this conversation could happen later. He floored the van, producing a cloud of black smoke, getting Bob's attention again. When the old man looked over, Daniel asked,
"Where are we going, Bob?"
Bob fell back into his seat.
"Turn around. Let's get on I-20 West. We just don't have any other good alternate at this point. It'll just save time. We'll only have to be on it for a short distance."
Daniel slowed and glanced over at Bob.
"Thought you wanted to stay off the interstate. You said we shouldn't be on it."
"I did say that, but we also just saw a man executed on the road in front of us. We've still got about 20 miles to get to my place."
Gene shouted,
"Turn this thing around."
Daniel cranked the wheel around, causing Gene to lose his balance. He laughed as he fought to keep his seat and shouted,
"Yeehaw!"
From his seat in the back of the van, Teague laughed maniacally. To him, this was all fun and games. He was already neck deep as it was, so he had no compunction about pointing a weapon at someone, or pulling the trigger for that matter. Daniel took the on-ramp and headed west on I-20.
There were other cars on the interstate, and all of them were driving fast, very fast. Christy leaned forward and looked between the seats.
This isn't so bad. There's other cars out here.
She looked at Bob.
I think you were wrong about the interstate, Bob.
Bob was watching the other cars, his eyes constantly scanning.
Maybe. We'll see.
It wasn't long before they were approaching the I-75 interchange, just at the edge of Turner Field and the south side of downtown Atlanta. Considering their location, they were making really good time. While there was some traffic on the road, it was nothing like the normal daily rush hour traffic. As they approached the interchange, Bob fidgeted. At the last moment, he shouted,
"Take 75 South!"
He had intended to take them on out I-20 to the I-285 west side perimeter and then turn south. But even though this route down I-75-85 would take them closer to the airport, it could be a better route and might answer some questions. Daniel quickly changed lanes, putting them on a southern track out of Atlanta. As Daniel was scanning the road, he was surprised just how easy it was to travel on the highway. Then, that very thought struck him. Why wouldn't it be? Sure, the downtown area was going to hell, but it wasn't the end of the world. He started to relax as he raced down the right-hand lane of the interstate. Suddenly, Bob pointed to the right.
Take the ramp!
Daniel took the long, sweeping ramp off the interstate onto the Arthur Langford Jr. Parkway, or the 166. Just as they got to the end of the off-ramp from I-75 onto 166, Bob shouted for Daniel to pull over to the side and stop.
I think I spotted the edge of a military blockade just past the 166 interchange, where I-85 splits to the west side of the airport and I-75 to the east side. You guys hang tight here while I walk over to the other side of 166 so I can look beyond to see if I was right.
Bob exited the van and quickly ran over to the far side of the four-lane road, where he hid in the bushes while checking out the I-75-85 split beyond.
I'll be damned. Those cock-sucking feds have both interstates blocked.
He could see people being handcuffed, and one guy with a gun that he didn't want to give up, who started running. The turret gunner on one of the up-armored Humvees cut him to ribbons with his 50 cal. That was all Bob needed to see. He ran like a scalded cat back to the van.
Hit it, Daniel. I'll explain as we drive, and I mean drive fast.
Just as they pulled off, a pair of Apache attack helicopters flew overhead, escorting a pair of Blackhawks towards downtown Atlanta. Everyone in the van was suddenly aware of just how close they had come to a most unpleasant end to their journey. After a few minutes of driving westward on 166 and everyone calming down a bit, Bob started explaining.
Guys, when I made that last-minute decision to come down I-75 instead of continuing on I-20 to the perimeter, I was hoping we could safely sneak by the airport on the I-85 side and onto the south side of the perimeter, and then connect with South Fulton Parkway to get to my place. It wouldn't have been any quicker than the route we're now going to take, just the way I sometimes travel home as an alternate route and a change of scenery. To be completely honest, I guess I just needed to satisfy my curiosity as to what might be happening at the airport. Well, now we know. You all saw the military choppers that flew over us. That was scary enough. What you heard but didn't see just before that was the turret gunner on an up-armored Humvee mowing down a guy who had a gun. There were at least a dozen military vehicles, including MRAPs, blocking both I-75 and I-85 southbound directions. They had lots of folks handcuffed and standing in a holding pen off to the side. Apparently,
The feds are using the airport as a staging area and don't want civilians to see it and figure out what's really happening. Now that I think about it, that makes perfect sense. It's the most logical place to operate from. I'm really sorry that it put us in danger going this way. My curiosity nearly killed the cat.
The 166 wound its way through residential areas and light industrial tracts. The road was a wide four-lane boulevard that would eventually narrow into a two-lane route as it got farther from Atlanta proper. Where the road narrowed, houses came right up to it, with driveways connecting directly to it. At these houses, the ones they could easily see from the road as they drove by, they started to see a difference. In many of these driveways, a car or truck sat at the edge of the road, preventing anyone from pulling in. At others, they witnessed people frantically loading their most treasured belongings into a car or truck in what looked, for all the world, to be a hasty escape. But even with that, the feel to the air was far less tense out here than in the city. Christy leaned forward and looked at Daniel.
I have to pee.
Bob looked over at her.
Hold it.
She slumped back into her seat, her arms crossed over her chest. Daniel looked at her in the mirror. Then he asked Bob,
how far away are we? If it stays like this, 20 minutes.
Daniel looked back at Christy.
20 minutes, babe. Can you wait?
Dismissively, she replied,
fine. There's a toilet in the back, Jean said.
Christy shook her head.
No thanks, I'll wait.
Daniel smiled to himself. He remembered the first time she used the small stool in the van. It hadn't helped that he'd laughed at her until he couldn't breathe. They'd been up in the mountains of North Georgia, camping for the weekend. In the middle of the night, Christy had to use the bathroom. He told her she could just go outside because they weren't in a campground, or she could use the toilet in the van. She chose the one in the van. The bathroom on the van is in what is essentially a very small closet. He never did get the full story from her about exactly what happened in there. But when she came out with her pants around her ankles and the blue toilet chemicals covering her from nearly the waist down, he burst into laughter. She was already crying, and him laughing only made it worse. But he couldn't help himself. He couldn't for the life of him understand how something like that could even happen. He'd used it many times. He knew how it worked. It was a simple device. And yet, somehow, Christy had managed to not only make the thing malfunction, but at the same time cover herself in that blue chemical agent. He knew that for her, that was an absolute last resort. As they approached County Line Road, Daniel had to slow down. The dollar store was being looted. People were streaming in and out of the shattered doors in a surprisingly orderly manner. Across the street sat a Chevron station, and on the other side of County Line was a Shell. Both of these stores had armed men in the parking lot. But unlike the ones they passed in Atlanta, these men weren't waving people into the parking lots. They seemed more intent on keeping people out. It seemed that the crowd was more interested in gutting the dollar store than the van. It was quite the contrary, actually. Some people, upon coming out of the store and seeing the van slowly rolling by, quickly ducked back in. It made Daniel smile. He was upset when he first saw what Jean had done to the van, but now, seeing how people reacted to it, he was glad he had. And it made him feel a little like a character out of a Mad Max flick. As is all too common and seems only to confuse, the road they were driving changed names, not only the road name, but even the route number. It was now Camp Belton Road, Route 154. Daniel looked at Bob.
Are we on the same road? The name and highway number changed. Bob lit a cigarette and snapped his Zippo closed. Blowing out a cloud of smoke, he asked,
Have you turned?
Daniel shrugged. No, just wanted to make sure we were going the right way. Bob nodded.
Just keep driving.
Christy was waving the smoke away from her face. Do you have to smoke in here? Bob laughed and replied,
Yes, I do. The balcony is closed.
Getting a chuckle out of Jean. Teague crawled forward, obviously annoying Christy.
Hey, Bob, can I have a smoke?
Bob looked at him sideways. Taking the pack out, he shook a smoke from it and offered it to Teague.
Don't make a habit out of it.
Teague clenched the cigarette in his teeth and smiled.
I won't.
As he moved back to the rear of the van, he paused and looked at Christy.
Don't worry. I'll blow it out the back window.
She didn't reply, and he made his way to his spot by the rear doors. He enjoyed his smoke as he looked out through the expanded metal covering the window holes. The air swirling around him felt cool as he watched the trees rush by. As they were now even further from Atlanta, the landscape was becoming more inviting to a boy from Michigan. The large hardwoods grew right up to the edge of the road, and the grass was still thick, though it wouldn't be for much longer. At Route 70, Cascade Palmetto Highway, Bob told Daniel to make a left. They hadn't passed many cars. It seemed people out here just weren't moving around. It was as if they were the only ones on the road. A housing development appeared on the left. It was occupied by large homes with a fake sense of wealth. While they were large two-story structures, they sat on small lots and were of mediocre construction. Stucco over OSB, cheap at best. But it was someone's dream, many someones from the size of the place. As they approached the entrance of Legacy something or other, they were closely scrutinized by a number of men manning a makeshift roadblock. They carried an assortment of weapons and watched the van closely as it rumbled past them. Looks like people out here are a little worried too, Daniel said.
It's only a matter of time before the people in the cities are forced to leave. That's what those guys are waiting on, Bob replied.
But they didn't make it far before the road was completely blocked. Daniel slowed the van as the line of trucks and construction vehicles came into view. It was yet another large pre-planned housing development with a name to instill confidence, pride, and possibly a little envy. Legacy at Palmetto Farms. This was kind of laughable when you considered the absurdity of someone farming palmettos. The men at this roadblock were pretty serious. They commandeered construction equipment from the area still under construction and moved it out onto the road, completely blocking it. They were all fairly well armed, with a number of ARs and AKs visible. Someone with some tactical experience was obviously overseeing the operations, as there were men placed on both sides of the road, and there were two pickups turned into technicals with mounted men, possibly as chase vehicles, or maybe as a quick reaction force. A man stepped out from the roadblock and raised his hand, motioning for Daniel to stop. Daniel slowed the van as he muttered, Oh, shit. Teague's head appeared between Bob and Daniel.
What sort of bullshit is this?
Bob sat up.
I don't know. Get your ass to the back of the bus and keep your eyes open.
What should I do? Daniel asked.
I suggest you slow down, Bob said.
Daniel slowed the van as they approached the man in the road. As he slowed, several other men came around the barricade to join the first one in the road. Daniel put both the front windows down as the armed men walked up to his side of the van and another approached Bob's side. The man on Daniel's side was a big guy. He wore an olive drab plate carrier with several magazine pouches and a pistol and a drop leg holster. With his bald head and earrings, he was an intimidating sight. The man looked the van over as he approached, then looked at Daniel.
"Where are you going?" he asked.
Before Daniel could reply, Teague shouted,
"None of your damn business!"
Bob turned in his seat.
"You need to shut the hell up!"
"Fuck him. Who's he to stop us and ask where we're going? It's none of his damn business," Teague shot back. The bald man leaned in to look in the van.
"Is there a problem in here?"
Gene spun around in his seat to face Teague.
"Look, kid, I like you."
Gene paused and racked the shotgun in his lap.
"But before I let you talk us into a gunfight, I'll cut you in half, understand? Just keep your mouth shut. There's a time to fight and a time to talk. You need to figure those two out. You feeling what I'm saying?"
Teague studied him briefly. Gene sat patiently, tapping his finger on the side of the shotgun. After a moment, Teague nodded.
"Got it."
Gene looked back over Daniel's shoulder.
"No problem here, bud."
Bob leaned forward.
"We're heading to my house. I live over off North Cut Lane."
The bald man looked the van over again. With a nod at the windshield, he asked,
"What's with all this?"
Bob jabbed a finger over his shoulder.
"Old Gene back there did that. We were in the Buckhead business district. It was rough. Good thing he did it too, because there were a couple of times people were throwing shit at us." "What's it like up there?"
"It's nuts. You don't want to go there," Daniel said.
"Riots?"
the man asked.
"Oh yeah.
We watched the feds raid one of the protester encampments. They just executed people right in the street. You want to stay away from the feds, man. They're bad news," Daniel said. The man reached into his plate carrier and pulled out a small leather case. He held it up to show a badge. It was a shield with an eagle, and above it, Department of Justice. On the shield was a large U.S. with Drug Enforcement Agency arching over the top of it. Daniel registered what he was seeing and swallowed hard. The man looked at the badge, then at Daniel.
"I am the feds, and you're right. You want to stay as far from them as you can."
Trying not to give away the fact he was about to shit himself, Daniel nodded.
"Yeah." "Is the power on out here?" Bob asked. "It comes and goes. What about in Atlanta?" the bald man asked. "It went off yesterday. We were in a bank building and running on the generator. But fuel was getting low, and the riots were getting worse. There was a lot of shooting between the cops and the people. We had to get out."
Pointing to Christy,
"We went to her apartment, but it was already looted. We decided it was a bad idea to try to go to anyone's place in town. Since I live out here,